down of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio.
Mini Ice Age Conversations Podcast. It's about observing cycles, sharing insights, and solving problems together by combining historical, climate, food, and economic data so you can make informed decisions as we shift into a new era. Here's what was. This is what's coming. Our world is never going back to 2019, so what would the new era look like? And most importantly, what is immediate that will affect the pocketbook and the outlook into next year so we can all get ready? Thank you for joining. I'm your host, David Dubine.
Right along here with Craig Simpson tonight from Radiant Creators. Ooh, the world has spun. Every week is just like amplifying in the spin. Wanted to talk about the digitization of all assets on the planet. I don't know if you've seen this, but Tether, USD Tether, has come out and said, well, we're going to back up the American dollar by issuing a gold-backed token that will be the bedrock for a dollar equivalent, and they're trying to work with the U.S. government. Suddenly they come out and go, we need to back our dollar by gold, but wait, we're going to use a private company in a crypto arena to do it? Sounds a little bit strange to me how they fast-track that. Then this whole real-world assets where they want to digitize everything on the planet, assign it a value, wrap it up in a smart contract, and then that value can move through the cryptosphere, whoever that contract. Could it be your house? Could it be your mortgage? Will it be a bank bail-in wrapped into all of the value of the homes to balance out this underwater whatever mess that they've created for us? I don't know. Craig's going to come in tonight, and there's power outages everywhere. If we look down, I was sending Craig some messages early before the show. We've got power outages now in Ecuador, power outages in Mexico, power outages in New Zealand. But what is it with this sudden power outages going on everywhere? And this is countrywide things happening. This is kind of, one country to go down in a grid, okay, sometimes, but not three countries in 2 days. Something seems amiss at the Circle K, as they used to say. Got new sanction packages, 14th sanction package on Russia. Ursula von der Leyen, favorite unelected EU bureaucrat, tells us, wait, the 14th, that was shocked. I thought, okay, first, second, third, fourth, 14th round of sanctions. So the first 13 didn't work. They think another one's going to work. Every time they do this, they just strengthen all these BRICS nations to kind of coagulate together as the blob. And then one thing I do want to – the farmers are being told to shut down water and ordering water to be shut off across Idaho. our potato crop in America is severely under duress right now. And they have to shut down their wells, their irrigation canals, the pumping stations. Everything's financed. So we're looking at catastrophic farm losses. Kansas is doing no better either. Farmers from Kansas feeling the financial pain. There's droughts everywhere. And now they're ordering the water to be shut down. So if we don't have a potato crop in America coming up this year from Idaho specifically, then what? Then what? Because it's as if the entire food supply is being turned off on purpose. This is all under the guise of the green agenda. So your guess is as good as mine where the world heads. But we have an idea and a general trend where it's moving to. But Craig, I appreciate you joining me. You know, you're an expert on the crypto, and I just, you know, follow on your coattails. But the world's working seem a little bit stranger. So the floor is yours, and welcome, man. Just trying to get some ideas from you tonight.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. Hope you can hear me. And, yeah, it's amazing how many things are, burning down these days. Like, are there any chicken farms left to actually burn down? I was wondering, because at the rate they were going up earlier in the last 2 years, 2-3 years or so, I don't think I've really heard of many chicken farms burning down recently. So I guess they got them all. That's my guess. There's just none left to burn. And
Craig, I'm going to stop you. They're just coming straight in and euthanizing what?
Yes.
This month alone. They're done with burning. They're just going in and confiscating now.
That's true. I've seen articles about that too. So maybe the burning them down was just getting a little bit too much of a focal. You know, people could see that they see the flames. They wonder why. You know, don't these large buildings that have all these chickens in them? Isn't there any, you know, fire suppression? Especially if you were a chicken farmer these days, you'd want some fire suppression. But yeah, now they just will come in and euthanize them all. And also, it does seem that if a chicken, and they're using the PCR test, the same thing they used for the COVID stuff, and that was, you know, proven to be very ineffective. So I think they're using really the same test or something similar, which is just, you know, silly. And you find one chicken that tests positive. I mean, the air would test positive. And so then they have to kill all the chickens within a certain area. And so ultimately, you know, if you have to take out every chicken within a quarter mile in a farming community or even in a neighborhood, people just have their backyard chickens. And then they're going to go, okay, we got to go door to door and start, you know, seeing if there's any chickens within a quarter mile, and then a chicken within a quarter mile of that one. So, yeah. It's just more covert now. I guess being overt was a little bit too obvious. So, yeah, not many chickens left. And, you know, also along with those lines, there's when you look at the Houthis in Yemen, who are definitely, I love them. They are the rednecks of the Arab world. And you had mentioned that they a Greek-owned ship carrying 80,000 tons of coal was headed for that place in the Red Sea, and they blew the crap out of it. So that thing sank. I don't think that thing limped back, and I hope the crew, you know, was able to just hop in their lifeboats and get away from there. But that coal is now at the bottom of the Red Sea, I would guess. So those things are blowing up too, and that nation it was headed to is primarily coal-powered, if people didn't know that. So this is a big deal. If the coal can't get through, that definitely does not help that nation whatsoever. And so what else? But as far as the Tether gold, that's rather interesting, because the thing is if I was looking at my notes, I know that recently, well, of course, we did have the BRICS, you know, economic summit is something we can definitely touch on. And I think there's 59 countries that want to join BRICS. And, you know, I mean, of course, Saudi Arabia is a big deal. And Turkey, I do believe they started the paperwork to join BRICS. And that's interesting because to me, Saudi Arabia, well, we've known they were heading that way for a while. Turkey, you got Erdogan. I think he's Some may like him, some may not. He's a very skillful politician. He's trying to keep the Persian, you know, not Persian Empire, but well, sort of. He's trying to keep, you know, his country alive, and so he's doing what he has to. And you know, a lot of nations have been playing both sides of the fence for a while, so that, well, the West doesn't bomb them and sanction them. So that's what Saudi Arabia's been doing, definitely what Turkey's been doing. But I think at the economic summit, I kind of see a shift happening where Turkey is happy to join BRICS. Saudi Arabia is. Saudi Arabia, the, what was it, the, I forget his name, sorry, one of the leader of Saudi Arabia in their kind of hierarchy of leadership there. He skipped the G7 summit to go to that, to go to the BRICS summit, I do believe. So he missed some G7 stuff. That's huge. So countries that have been playing both sides of the fence, and I think you can kind of throw India in on this one as well, I think are beginning to, it's starting to be obvious that, sure, they were playing both sides of the fence, but I think they've hopped over to one side of the fence now. That's the BRICS side. And that's definitely something that our leaders in the West don't know how to deal with. And so, especially when you look at Russia, I think, did become the top energy supplier for Europe in May of this year. And so when you look at sticking with the Western Empire, what does that offer you? If you're Taiwan or the Philippines, they want you to, you know, make ready for a war with China. And of course, if you're the EU nation, if you're an EU nation, you know, or anyone involved in NATO, you know, including, you look at like America's economy, you know, they want you to be bankrupt for, you know, a conflict that, you know, should have ended in, well, the Cold War. Russia fell apart in 91. Why do we still need a NATO? Even if you kept it around for a decade, you could just say, okay, a decade, we'll let it go after that. It should have been gone in, you know, 2010 or something, or anywhere in the year 2000. So that's a lot of rambling to get started, but been thinking about a lot of things. And with the tether gold, now, one of the things I wanted to mention was what nations. Yes, if I remember correctly, India, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, and a few other South African countries have brought their gold home the last couple of years recently. So I do believe India, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, like I say, a few South African countries. And to a growing extent, I think you'll see it across all the BRIC nations, especially the 59 countries that want to join BRICS and probably will this year, at least some of them, they're going to bring their gold home. And that's a really interesting situation that we find ourselves in. So, yes, gold is becoming more valuable. And I do think if we look at the, as it's called, the M-Bridge project. I think some people also call it like the straw man like project, which sounds very straw man sounds like just that saying, but I think there's something called like the straw man project. You may know what it's called. I forget. I think that's what it's called. But also people sometimes reference the M bridge project, which is I think mostly driven by Hong Kong, Bank of Thailand, People's Bank of China, and what that is that really is a way to, if I was to look it up, it says like Project Enbridge aims to create a cross-border payment solution that focuses on central bank digital currencies, emphasizing efficiency, cost-effectiveness, scalability, and regulatory compliance. But it's completely off the SWIFT system, and they're looking at, you know, using like the China Bank of whatever it's called, where the nations like Iran, they can trade in the yuan, and then they can instantly turn that to gold, basically, from, what is that, the Shanghai Gold Exchange or something like that it's called? I forget what it's called. But I think that as we see the BRICS, more and more nations head in that direction, and I think, like I say, ones that have been playing both sides of the fence, like India, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, And like I said, a lot of the 59 countries that are about to join BRICS, and then a couple of South African nations, but I forget which ones they were, that are all pulling their gold in. They're heading towards BRICS. The paperwork's on the table. There was a big economic summit, you know, by the BRIC nations, you know, just recently. What was it, a couple of weeks ago, if even that? And the whole thing was about how do we protect ourselves from the weaponized dollar? You know, this has been in the works for quite a while. And so I think that we're not going to see these nations playing both sides of the fence by the end of the year. I really don't think so. And so Tether Gold comes into play. Now, there's been like PAXG, that's one project, and there's been other projects. There's one like called Carrot Gold, that was KBC. There's been a good number of, attempts at a gold-backed, you know, commodities-backed crypto. But I do think that, you know, whatever digital currencies they're using or just, you know, just regular, you know, currencies like the yuan, or the ruble, whatever they're going to do, we're going to see ultimately gold-backed or commodities-backed currencies being the way of the BRICS, and we're already seeing it. I mean, just when you see nations trading in their own local currencies, you know, then especially being able to go to the Shanghai Exchange and convert that to gold, that's what they really want. So when you see nations of recent times, recent years, are pulling their gold back, you know, within their own shores, they don't want it, you know, in any other country. It's obvious that commodities, you know, commodity-backed currencies are going to be what the BRICS do. You know, will they strictly be gold-backed? I'm not sure. I think we may even see, like, never just one currency the BRICS use. It might be a few. I mean, even just trading in your own local currencies between nations, why not? You know, so we're seeing that. Of course, we know that Saudi Arabia didn't sign up for the petrodollar, you know, scam that's been going on for quite a while, where they had to keep their, you know, dollars in American treasuries and such like that. So I think that's a big deal too. You know, Saudi Arabia, they don't go to one of the G7 summits, but they do go to the BRIC, you know, economic summit. And that's a big deal. So we're seeing some crazy times. And, you know, I look at it like the BRICS really are right now. They represent to me Silk Road 2. I think that's what's really happening. Just like with the Grand Solar Minimum, you have the Gulf Stream moves and the climate changes, and where it was desert, it becomes, you know, forest, and where it was forest, it becomes desert. I think you also maybe very well you're seeing right now that economic reality of, you know, West versus East. Well, it's been the West's turn for a while, and we certainly have abused that just plenty. I mean, America alone, you know, since like 1947, has done like 90 regime changes around the world, which is pretty jacked up. I mean, you can't blame countries for hating us. I mean, no one likes their government overthrown, even if they don't like their government, you know? And so, like you mentioned, Tether Gold, it's a little, I think it actually back ends to the Ethereum blockchain. And I mean, the Ethereum blockchain seems okay to me. I'm not sure what to think of it. I look at it like, sure, you know, if people do start using it, I think it's actually called XAUT or something like that. It's got a, you know, market cap of, looks like 581 million right now, which equals like 644 gold bars. So, you know, I haven't researched it too much, but really it all comes down to, you know, do you trust where it's held and who holds it? And, you know, sure, if we have a token that represents a certain, you know, weight in gold, like whoever, you know, however many Satoshis were in, you know, I'm not really sure how they're doing it right now. I guess maybe one whole, like one Bitcoin, you could say, whatever one, you know, gold token is, one Tether Gold is equivalent to a dollar or one gold bar or like a gram of gold, or I'm not sure how they're breaking it up right now, but, you know, it's been tried before without too much success. But, you know, if the right players are doing it, I don't see why it couldn't work. Although for me, you know, I'm way more interested in having, when it comes to gold and silver, you know, having the physical asset. I think that's really the point of it. But, you know, as you diversify, you know, if I trusted it, would I be happy with some, you know, tether gold. As long as I have confidence that who's holding it really is holding it, then we're good to go. But for me right now, it would only be a slight hedge, and it would be a way to, especially, the one thing is, you know, can you turn tether gold into gold? Kind of like, you know, like the Shanghai, what is it, gold exchange? You can turn currencies into gold, which is what, you know, some countries are doing. And, you know, the desire for the hard asset is definitely on the rise these days. So I guess I'd have a lot of questions with the tether gold. I would say, you know what, maybe for, you know, commerce, like if somebody said, hey, you know, I'll take this much, you know, tether gold for this or something like that, maybe I would, you know, buy tether gold and use that for the exchange. But I don't know. What do you think? I mean, to me, when it comes to gold and silver, it's all about the physical asset. Definitely, if you trust, like, there are metals-based IRAs and things like that, I could see doing that, you know. But to me, like, the real gold and the real silver, the real platinum, the real copper, that's really what you've got in your hand. But I think that the BRICS are going to go to a commodities-based, I think, you know, currency. I think they're already doing it, really. They very well may have a tether gold, but it would be like the BRICS gold coin, the BRICS commodity-backed coin or something like that. So, you know, I think that fiat currency, maybe in the new, you know, Silk Road 2.0 era, is all going to be backed by something real. And I guess if a nation or a conglomeration of nature of nations are, you know, standing behind a currency that they create and it's electronic, maybe it even has dollars, I don't know, attached to it. But like us, the coins to the other day, and they have like, you know, golden dollars. They have like golden, like half dollars. It's cool. It's like the thickness of a dollar bill, and it's gold. It's like 24 carats. It's actually very, very cool. And it's like a gram or a couple grams. It depends. People are buying those these days. So anyways, I have a little bit of trepidation about any kind of gold or silver investing that isn't, you know, I want the physical gold right now because the world's just kind of crazy. But definitely if I had to make transactions in like a BRICS currency, a Silk Road 2.0 currency, and, you know, one of the ones they were using was tether gold, I guess I could do it. But I think that the nations are probably going to want to, you know, create something more stable because, you know, the Ethereum blockchain, yeah, that's great. But, you know, one thing I do think about is that it's been rumored that like the new BRICS, you know, currencies they want to use, you know, maybe Bitcoin would be one for, you know, international settlement. And that would definitely pump Bitcoin's price. I would like to have, you know, anyone has some insider knowledge about that, let me know. But like that could definitely push the price of Bitcoin up if, you know, the BRIC nations start using it, you know, for oil and energy and other trade. But the only thing is, though, how long is Ethereum? Like, let's say that BRIC nations decide to use Tether Gold, or it really becomes this vault, maybe a couple of vaults where they're keeping gold that actually backs Tether Gold, and they mean to do well. They'd have to stay out of America. That's one thing. and if they could find safe havens for those to exist, you know, I have that same old fear of, you know, Bitcoin, or especially with this, like, Tether Gold, if it's back ending to the Ethereum blockchain, these could all become terrorism overnight, and then they just go away. You know, I think the price of Ethereum, the price of Bitcoin, Tether Gold would just plummet. And, yeah, it's true, you know, the Western Empire couldn't get rid of it, but they certainly could keep, you know, anybody in a Western country from using it. And I just don't think, like, right now I think that they ignore Bitcoin, they ignore Ethereum, they ignore Tether Gold. They're just very small market caps. They just don't care. You know, maybe BlackRock and other, you know, companies like to stock up on some Bitcoin. But even with that, there isn't like they're, you know, betting their fortunes on it. And they're manipulating the market. So, you know, I do think I watch the big orders come in, and I see, you know, Bitcoin being manipulated all day, and you know that the big money's on a conference call, and they're longing and shorting, and they're just basically, you know, giving each other money basically, and they're wrecking retail investors. But I don't know. I think the day that I'll call it the empire, also the invisible empire, sees Bitcoin or Ethereum or Tether Gold as a real threat to the dollar supremacy. And the dollar's already in enough trouble as it is with Silk Road 2.0 emerging. I look at it like, I say, it's going to be terrorism overnight as soon as the empire really goes, oh, look, this is actually viable. Like, I would say that if the BRIC nations said tomorrow that Bitcoin's going to be one of their settlements, you know, one of the things they actually use, it would probably be terrorism by Monday. its price would plummet, and the Western Empire would just make it illegal for anybody to own it. You know, they give you a certain amount of time to sell it, and then if they catch you with one Satoshi on a forgotten, you know, hardware wallet, you're going to the pokey, you know. So that's a lot of rambling, but that gets the show started.
Yeah, I'm gonna take you back to 1999, May 18th. How much do you think a nacho's at Taco Bell? 1999. Look at the receipt here. Somebody posted this up here on Telegram and said, hey, I found a 1999 Taco Bell receipt. Nacho's, Taco Bell, 69 cents.
Oh, my gosh. And that was 1999?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's like $8 today. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh, 1999.
And it's not full of the chemicals and preservatives and glyphosate and all the things that we ingest in our bodies. That would have been clean food. You know, you got to look back at it. Me and my sister were joking. When you know, hey, when we would eat junk food back when we were growing up, that was actually health food today. You know?
Oh yeah. So much.
I had a statement to make about that, you know, because you said that they're trying to repatriate their gold in like Egypt,
yes,
Turkey, and other places.
Saudi, yeah.
Bring it home is the question. At what point do nations go, uh-oh, we give it away, we won't have any gold left? And like the U.S., for example, we're not letting some nations take all of their gold out of our nation as it was in holdings. And we've seen that through the decades anyway, but even more now. At what point do they say, no, we're not going to give up any of the gold? Because a lot of people are coming knocking right now, and it is under dispute whether we even have any gold left at all in America. Very much like in Canada, they were forthright and said, well, I think we only have a few hundred ounces left for the treasury in Canada. Something insane. But they had no reserves in their national bank. And I want to put the point straight for everybody out there. Yes, this BRICS trading bloc is emerging, and people can jump up and down and go, yay, the American empire, the American military empire is over. Everybody's going to live free, and we're all going to sing kumbaya together in equality. Let's talk with the emergence of BRICS. But I am going to say it is still under full control of the Bank for International Settlements, what Greg Rent mentioned with Enbridge.
Yes.
That full transition is overseen by the BIS. We are not changing characters in any way, shape, or form. What we are doing is changing of an age. We are changing systems in unison. And just like in COVID, all countries zigged and zagged like a school of fish, including North Korea. So, you know, something that bizarro where every nation on the planet, 100% of all nations came together to move in the same trajectory in the same minutes, 100% in unison. I think this is more of a planned thing than just an organically just rising up. Well, we're tired of American bullying across the planet, stealing our resources. Are you kidding me? I've been doing so many reports on Africa. That continent has been put totally off of use by all nations on the planet. It was set aside for this time right now to be able to reboot our debt system, restart the debt system in an areas, plural, across the planet that that and can be reissued to then gain interest from people who are in areas that had never had this kind of wealth before and milk them dry as well. So if you're there jumping up and, you know, hitting your head on the ceiling almost because BRICS is almost alive and we're going to be done with America, yay, you are under the same Archon controllers of the Bank for International Settlements. They're going to digitize every asset on the planet, and that's even scarier because right now we live in a semi-free world. But once there is a value assigned to every single thing, forest on your property, they're going to digitize an acre of that. That's going to have a value with it. This is how they're going to get the carbon sequestration credits. At the same time, a bank that might have a loan on your property will have the value wrapped up from that 1 acre of forest on a smart contract, but they can sell off somewhere else, trade off for debt that they have secure funding for. Once they digitize everything, including your car loan, your auto loan, your social security number, your pensions, your whatever labor you're putting out, your intellectual property, once this mechanism moves forward to digitize the entire planet's resources, this is where it gets a little kind of scary because you never know who owns what. It's very much going to be worse than the 2008-09 financial crisis where they bundled all those mortgages together. They had subprime, triple B, triple A, subprime, and it was all in one big package. Pre-sold split up, pre-sold again 100 times over, and when people are asking, okay, if you're going to kick me out of my house, I need the physical mortgage in front of me to say that I'm not paying my mortgage. And they're like, well, we can't find it. A lot of people were able to stay in their homes because the banks themselves couldn't produce the paperwork. At that level, it's going to be times 1,000 here when we try to digitize everything, assign value to it, and who owns what. And, you know, you brought up an important point there, Craig, is like, who is going to be the overseer to guarantee that the asset is where it's at? Now, a forest, that's pretty easy to see. The trees are there. But coming into a metals warehouse to see that a ton of gold is locked somewhere in a vault underground, you're going to have to rely on the third party, the fourth party, or the fifth party to guarantee that that asset is truly where it is supposed to be and that contracts wrapped around that are what they say they are. And your Tether gold is going to be fractionalized 8 digits deep. So they're really toying with the idea of, you know, in a grid down situation, if you have if you have an ounce of gold, that's pretty much worthless, unless you're buying something massively large like a car. But in a grid down, and you need to get a loaf of bread, or you need to buy some food, or get some whatever water filter, or you know, buy water, or trade with somebody, you know, a couple bushels of apples or something. That ounce of gold you hold in your hand is literally worthless because you're going to give that away to get the food and nobody's going to have change for it. But if there is a working infrastructure and people running Starlink and you're able to do some sort of broadcasting of transaction, like Pax Gold, Paxos Gold, again, you can digitize that. You can, you know, fractionalize it off. And I forget how many digits they're going deep there. Was that 12 or 16? Can't remember on that one. But the same thing as fractionalized gold. Yeah. Now, see, it's usable. If you can fractionalize it, like even 4 digits deep, that's doable. But then you're talking about 1/1,000th of an ounce of gold, which today's price would be, what, $2.30. That's doable. Because let's use – I was looking at Bitcoin while you were talking there, Craig, and 63,000 we'll round it off to. And then an ounce of gold currently is $2,400. So the current ratio is 26.25 ounces of gold equals 1 Bitcoin. You're going to digitize that, and you're going to run 8 digits deep. You can go down into 24 cents with that. Like, that's nearly impossible in today doing with gold. Even what you're talking about, the gold backs, that kind of thing where it has the gold inside the actual note and bill, the lowest denomination there is going to be $1. So with this going 8 digits deep, you can take a $2,400 ounce of gold, digitize it 8 digits deep, and bring it down to 24 cents. So there's a use case for it. I totally see where the use case is. in terms of bringing it into the real world, how people can use it for real. But again, who's going to guarantee that that ounce of gold's behind there? Because we haven't been able to audit anything in America for, what, 50-odd years? So we don't even know. There's nothing in Fort Knox. Come on. They say there is, but aren't we not able to hold it? And those of you out there that are storing metals, it only takes a stroke of a pen and the declaration of martial law, and all resources and assets come under the guise of U.S. military. So they could take their Blackhawks and just swoop right down and pull gold from all storage facilities across the United States in one single afternoon. I mean, how many ops would it take where they would know every single storage facility, where it is, every state, and they're just going to rappel down, and then they're going to swoop it up and take it with them. So, you know, those of you who do have storage, it might be gone in a stroke of a pen. You know, you're going to have to own that physical. But again, to break your ounce of gold down into 1/1000th of an ounce, that's a bit tricky. Even on the chemistry scale of doing things like that, how do you get a laser to cut so precise? That would be such a, it would be so small, it would be, you would lose it. You wouldn't even be able to put it in a plastic, you know, sometimes they have those little plastic holders that you put an ounce of silver or gold in. Like if you dropped 1/1000th of an ounce in there, I don't even know if you'd physically be able to see it through the plastic. That's how small it is. But digitize it, and then if it's in a repository of, you know, it's a gold bar, 10-ounce gold bar that's digitized, well, then the value's there. The swapping of all these contracts is, well, going to be under the control of the Bank for International Settlements once again. Which, what does it do? It does nothing. It brings us full circle back to the same controllers controlling the same finance, just resetting up their dirty system in a different part of the world as they milk what was the previously wealthy part of the world dry and exterminate, so there's no opposition or people complaining, and they just reset everything up where it hasn't been set up before. The Middle East, North Africa, the Sahel, Africa proper, and they rerun their debt system. You think people living on $1 or $2 a day are not going to be happy to be able to get a loan to then maybe own a car or a house or a yard or something, sprinkler system? Once they get the water filtration thing figured out and tap all those aquifers that are beneath Africa, there's like 100,000 cubic kilometers of water under there that hasn't even been touched yet. You know, Gaddafi was really big into trying to farm the desert, and he was tapping into the Nubian sandstone aquifer, which in itself was like 12,000 cubic kilometers of water. I mean, you start to think about the aquifers. We've been using our aquifers in America for 150 years. And it's only in the center of, and it doesn't refill as readily as Africa does because it's three sides by ocean. Our North American continent is only predominantly on the west that's refilling all that from the Pacific Ocean that's filtering through. I know there's groundwater, rainwater, lakes, rivers, etc. But a huge amount of that aquifer filling is from regenerative desalinization from the pressures from ocean water pushing it through the sandstone substrate. There's a lot of granite in America. There's not so much granite in Africa. It's more sandstony, porous. So I just think we're being played here, Craig. I think we're being played, and they're trying to give it the guise of a new world starting. But my whole thing is, food production, A, requires funding, bridge loans, operational loans. But think about the investment to bring Africa to the modern world. You would need roads. Oh, wait, China is already building that. But to put it in play where you'd get out a full agricultural zone built in the Sahel, tapping the beneath water resources, and then, you know, obviously the West African monsoon's been shifting for quite some years now. Much more rainfall from above, from the clouds, both East Africa and West Africa. Now think about the trillions and trillions of dollars just required for infrastructure, then the multiple trillions for upkeep, and how many jobs would be required. I did a a series of videos on how they were going to pay people to come from all these African nations and work to install that infrastructure and work as the laborers for the processing of crops. You know, there's a huge amount of manpower involved in the agricultural industry. You're going to machinery breaks minutely. If you haven't had a farm, you don't know what I'm talking about. Your machines are always broken. Ours are. Everybody's are. They're always repairing something. You're always needing repairs. There's need people repairing all the time. It requires a lot of input, time, labor, manpower. So if you're from Chad and you're coming to work and you're in Mauritania, I mean, those two currencies don't swap too well on an international market, and you probably lose 25 or 30% on your exchange rate. My whole thing was USD Circle, USDC, was going to be the stable coin traded across Africa, and they were going to run on Algorand to build in some of that debt swap. So you're going to have a stable coin where one person works in one country, and it doesn't matter what country they work in, one equals a dollar. So when they take it back to their home country, it still has the same value that they got when they were working in country XYZ. And you just look how the world is shifting. There's nothing new under the sun, and I really mean that. What's new, what's not new, is the controllers that have been in control for 4,000 plus years are still running the show, and they're just telling you, bankrupt the West, move all that money over to this new area of Africa. Their grow zones are going offline because of electromagnetic shifts off the sun, which in turn tweak our magnetic field on the Earth. So they already know through multiple cycles of this thing happening naturally where the crops are going to be lost, where they're not going to be able to grow food in the future. So they're cutting their losses now based on past cycles, and they're moving it. And I'm just wondering how many times this has come in and out of, you know, who writes history, and how many times this has moved around. Because after another 100 years, we're going to come back, and they're going to need to restart the debt system again, right? Fourth turning. Then we got the grand solar minimum cycles. We got Bray cycles. We got DeVries cycles. We got this half galactic cross cycle at the Younger Dryas boundary era. We got the galactic year cycle, which many say we are absolutely at the beginning of it again, because Aquarius marks that demarcation zone between the beginning and ending of the great year. So all these cycles in time, the debt system has to restructure. So then let's take us back 100 years in time. Oh, World War One. That's when we were coming off a bimetals system in the 1860s, which was a gold and silver standard. Swing us into the gold standard just in time for the Federal Reserve to start itself up and World War One. And I'm telling you, I am absolutely sure that was purely to reset the system and move it into the new era of banking and destroy part of the old, bring in the new. Guarantee it. And then we got World War II again. Same thing, reset the world, and here we are again. But this is more of a cataclysmic natural cycle overriding on top of a four-turning economic cycle. And whoever understands this, it's the same players from the Bank for International Settlements and all these high organizations that have been that understand the cycles, like the Vatican. They got an enormous amount of information. Any of these museums where things are private, what about the Smithsonian? But how much knowledge is hidden away from us that leaders, banking, finance families, dynastic families, doesn't matter which continent, it could be Asia, it could be Europe, doesn't matter. But they understand this old knowledge of cycles. So I'll put it back to you, Craig, but I just say we're repeating another one, and the same players are going to be in charge as the shift moves. So don't y'all get too excited about BRICS. It's under control of the same players that have enslaved this planet. But they're going to do it in a digital fashion to make sure that they can account for every 1,000th of a cent on the planet. And who knows who they're beholden to? They're tapping through the realms. I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. Well, there's the empire that we see. Then there's the invisible empire. You know. So, yeah, they definitely serve the invisible empire. Well, one thing I think about with what you're saying is, I think some nations, some parts of the world have more of a more continuity to history, and I think that China does, and I think that India does, and so I think they've got, you know, better records that go back a few thousand years, where you know, your average American, you know, they pretty much remember, you know, maybe a couple sports seasons. That's about the extent of their history. And so it would be fitting that since now, if we're going from, it's the fall of Western Empire, and I've mentioned it many times, but like I say, it's just a fall of civilizations. Look at that on YouTube. And it's all about, it's masterfully done, these amazing documentaries on the fall of civilizations. And if you watch these, they're great. The Bronze Age one is really great. One of them gets into the sea people. Who were they? They were just, there's the idea of them just being refugees, you know. And don't we kind of have sea people now? We have like 17 million, like, you know, sort of legal, illegal aliens that are now here in the country. That's our version of the sea people. Also the one on Britain is great, Rome is great, all of them are great. So, and it's a little melancholy to watch it, but it also feels good because when you watch the commonalities of the fall of empires and you realize that it's cyclical, you know, when I think about the earth plane, like living here on earth, it's cyclical. And so, you know, I have it's kind of a spiritual belief, but I think that the earth never changes. I think 1,000 years from now, it will just still be going through cycles. It's a 3D cycle experience for the soul. And so you go through however many incarnations you're going to be here, and then you simply will just go on to a greater earth, a deeper experience. It's fine, you know, but earth itself will never change. So in a sense, now we move to the Eastern Empire, the Eurasian Empire. We move back to that side. And then after a certain amount of time, cycles, you know, you can look at like the cycles of astrology. You can look at the turnings that have become popular, the fourth turning. You look at the course of grand solar minimum and maximum cycles. Also like astrology, the Pluto return. America is in its 250-year Pluto return, which does tend to wipe out empires. You know, Rome went through two. The first one didn't wipe it out, but it affected it. Second one, it kind of had to go and bring its borders in a lot tighter than they used to be. And so I find a little bit of comfort in just knowing that empires rise and they fall. And, you know, here I am in America. I love it. You know, I love my country, but I also look at it and go, it's the fall of the Western Empire. And I start to feel a little bit of comfort in that, and I just go, you know what, there's not a damn thing I can do about it. These are big gears that are turning, and it doesn't matter my opinion. These things will just happen because that's the earth. That's what it does. It's cyclical like this. And then, you know, humans spend individually, or with your little soul posse of people, you spend however many concurrent or like all at once incarnations, however you see it, until you basically get over the cyclical nature of the 3D reality, and you kind of go 4D basically, and you just have a easier time. It's the evolution of the soul. So earth plane is cyclical, and then I start getting into, well, who really cares where you're at in the cycle, whether you're in the whether your empire is rising or it's at its maximum or its minimum or it's falling. So what? You can still manifest whatever you want. You can still create whatever life you want. But I think having that awareness that the cyclical nature of earth plane, as I call it, it's inevitable. So if we're here in America, which maybe a lot of the people listening are here in America, but not everybody, you get into, well, how are you going to survive and better than that thrive and have a good time while we go through our great taking, you know, our great reset, while we go from Western Empire running the show, which definitely has been brutal and terrible, and it's tortured the world. America's number one export's been misery for decades. And with that said, like, I guess in the midst of all of it, I'm kind of doing fine because I just feel like it's not hopeless. It's just that I have to kind of, you know, like in martial arts, you learn to pull your arms in tightly in a way. If your arm is extended, you're weak. But when you pull your arms in, you know, tightly, Like if you want somebody, if somebody grabs your wrist, you pull your wrist to you and then just twist it, then just pull it. And then that person can't, you work against their thumb and they can't, even a big person can't hold a small wrist if you know leverage. And so I think you just start to know your spiritual center, find your power there, find your ability to focus and manifest, and then have sense with your finances. And if you can, certainly have some land, you know, live off the grid a little bit. Maybe multiple properties are good because you never know. We might, you know, mobility might be a good idea. That might be, you know, wealth in the future. You know, are we always going to live here in America? Gosh, like, might we, you know, after the Great War, flee to Russia? I mean, who knows? But I think in a sense, stay spiritually, physically, mentally sound and strong, be strong, get stronger. Let your human intuition, your spiritual connection to God force, keep focusing on that and strengthening that so that you can always be ahead, a step ahead, whether it's a week, a month, or a few years ahead of the herd that just basically, you know, every disaster possible befalls them, you know. But that's the thing. Not everybody is within this cyclical progression. You know, you have a certain level of attainment of awareness, and if you're listening to this, you probably are doing a little bit better than the average. And so what's happening to the masses, what's happening during this fall of Western Empire, it doesn't have to wreck you, doesn't have to ruin you at all. You know, you can do quite well. I'm not saying go invest in landmines, even though you probably make a lot of money. You can you know, stay ethical, but you certainly can do well. And you know, what do you think about, like, with the Belt and Road Initiative? I mean, I do look at the West, and we squandered a lot of our fortunes ever since the 90s in the Middle East, just, you know, killing lots of Arabs, basically, you know, knocking – ever since the 70s, gosh, you get into, like, Dick Cheney and stuff and, like, in Sullivan. Like, so many of these characters have been around forever. Then you look at, like, the Ukraine on Fire, the great documentary. All the players who knocked over Ukraine in 2014 are now – one of them's president. You know, I mean, and now we're doing, like, you know, Ukraine on Fire Part 2. I mean, the Western Empire seems like it doesn't – here's the thing. I know there's like a central force. I know what you're saying about like the central, you know, banks and stuff like that, or the, you know, Bank of International Settlements. But I'm not sure that everything is completely lined up, you know. It looks like – and I could just be, you know, falling for the huge false flag in the sky. But it seems like the Western Empire – doesn't really want to give up, and we're seeing a lot of it be destroyed. You know, we're seeing the European Empire be destroyed by the Ukrainian War, you know, and that's at behest of America, I think. You know, they're destroying themselves, and like we blow up, you know, Germany's pipeline, and they just, you know, deny that we did it. I think that nobody is like when you look at all the layers of empire, like cores on a CPU, like 1,000 cores of empire, you might say, on this great big CPU, they're not all in lockstep. You know, some of them, like I get this feeling that like a lot of the, maybe some of the American, like Western Empire doesn't want to give up its power, you know. And
yeah, go ahead. This has to look real.
Yes.
To be believed.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. And that's the thing. And I might be falling for it. I very well may, you know. But I do think that I'm not sure if the entire empire is lined up. You know what I mean? It's just that there's never like 100% consensus. You know, like how long will the European countries destroy themselves for America's war in Ukraine? Maybe it's bigger than that. Maybe I'm falling for details that don't even exist, you know. But, you know, then I look at I know we want to use this on YouTube, so I will not even mention the country. But
YouTube,
that
we're only running on Revolution Radio tonight.
Oh,
thank you,
okay.
Radio, for letting us speak freely.
Okay.
Speak your mind, Craig. We're not live on YouTube tonight. We cut that feed.
Oh, okay. Well, you have like the Israeli thing. So you look at the timing is so perfect. Like, if I look at the, I mean, maybe it's all just to be believed, but I look at it and go, so you've got countries that are old, I think, you know, people that are old, like, I'm going to say India, I'm going to say China, they have an awareness, you know, even actually, like in Israel, the rabbis are keepers of, you know, ancient astrology and a lot of history. So I think they have a greater knowledge than it oftentimes appears of cycles and such. So it would make sense that with the Belt and Roads Initiative that you've got Russia, a high culture, ultimately, China, you got India, I think, these countries that are aware of history, it would make sense that they're driving the Belt and Road Initiative, you know, and that they're driving Silk Road 2.0, you know. And my hope is, and like I say, I could totally be a Pollyanna, I totally could, that maybe they won't want to be, you know, the Bank of International Settlements bitch like the West was, you know. Maybe they have no choice, you know, but maybe it's just fanciful, but for me, it's hard to imagine that everybody is lined up to just be slaves again. And that's, but they very well may be. I mean, 90% of the population doesn't care, really. And then the few that do that have that awareness, it doesn't really matter what they think. All they can do, like yourself, me, you know, many others, is you can make your own life good through this transition, you know, but you really can't stop the big gears from turning. So I would like to see a little light through all of it and think the Bank of International Settlements doesn't just own it, but they very well could, you know. But anyway, what do you think about the old cultures? Like,
The Magi.
India.
The Magi, yeah. the Arab arm of that, following the stars and the cycles through the heavens. So yeah. When you talk about Belt and Road Initiative, maybe they know there's a way, super incredible, heavy, powerful cycle coming back, and they're working together just to try to survive through it. Now, that could make sense to me, too. Because you got Watchers of Time. They're India, which is the cradle of civilization in Indus Valley. You got the Watchers of Time through Persia and Edom and the Magi all the way over, way back to the Sumerian cultures. And also you got China with 4,000 years of culture also on the Silk Road and further back with the emperors saying they had the mandate from heaven. Like, all of these cultures are cycle, star watching, cyclical signs in the heavens, cultures at the bedrock of their culture. They all see something heating right now, so they're working in unison to try to survive. Be back in 2 minutes and 2 seconds. Do I sound like Chuck Woolery? 2 and 2. Be back right after a short break here on Revolution Radio. Greg Simpson with you. Radio. See ya. Come right back. Talk about the Magi. The Lost Girl. Oh, the Eagle Twins. Come right back.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Roux Show Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio!
Traveling through cosmic time and space with AC/DC, the vibration of energies. David Dubine here with Craig Simpson from Radiant Creators. Just as we were going on the break, we were talking about the ancient star watching people across the BRICS nations, including Persia, India, China, Russia. What do they all have in common except incredibly long histories of those at the bedrock of societies, the star watchers in cycle? I wouldn't say fanatics, but they understood the cosmic changes, the flows of these Birkeland currents into our star also change human perception as well as frequency fields on the planet, which in turn would bend our jet streams and cloud cells. They could grow food or they could not. Humans could perceive evil. They could see it. They could manifest instantly. They could not. These changes of energies across our galaxy affect our planet directly, and they were watchers of these shifts in time and energies both. Thank you, Revolution Radio, for letting us talk tonight freely. We're not going to be streaming on YouTube, so we can talk. But, you know, there's a lot of censorship out there today, so if you consider what we talk about and many, all of the others here on Revolution.Radio, valuable to help you see and try to navigate the change. You know, like Craig said, it's a giant time clock in the grand scheme of things, but you can navigate yourself through this time and provide you, your family, your friends, yourself, the best existence you can, as long as you can front-run the changes. And you're manifesting in front of the changes, and you're not grabbed by the coattail and being blown by the wind because you're unprepared or unknowing of what's happening. That's what this is all about, is being able to share information so we can get ready and embrace this change versus being tidal-waved and overwhelmed by it, and you're just going through fear instead of understanding what's happening. If you think that's worth something, consider a donation here at Revolution Radio. Now, Craig, before the break, you know, talking about the Magi, and on the break, I quickly looked up, who were the star watchers of Russia?
Yeah.
Arkiam, where 16th century BC. So we're going back, you know, 3,600 years ago. And they were part of the Aryan race. So the Indo-European peoples of that time, too, in addition to the Magi, and in addition to the Chinese, and in addition to the Persians, going further back, everybody was focused on the stars. Now, maybe it was because they'd come out of the Younger Dryas and the stories were much closer at that point. You're talking about 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 years prior. They'd only had a few thousand years after the Younger Dryas impact. Society restarted again. They had the Great Cooling around 8,100 years ago that dropped whatever society had evolved and emerged after the Younger Dryas impact. They had like 2,500 years of stable climate, started warming, and then suddenly the bottom dropped about 5 degrees Celsius 8,100 years ago, and I mean literally a decade or under. Average global temperatures plummeted some 11 degrees Fahrenheit, and that wiped out whatever civilization had emerged after the Younger Dryas. And then subsequently after that, those peaks and troughs got a little bit tighter, so it didn't drop as much in the temperatures. Because you talk about Norse mythology and Greek mythology and Egyptian mythology and ancient Rome and ancient Mesopotamia and all them coming and going, ancient wisdom of the stars and the heavens. My whole thing, you know, just before the break, I mean, you got to look at all this combined knowledge of how many, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of combined knowledge with all of these cultures around the world do we have of watching the stars and understanding these cycles come and go. And the reason I would think, perhaps, maybe it's naivete, I'm not sure, but if we have the oldest, longest-running cultures on the planet all coming together in a trade block, perhaps they've all seen something in the stars that would have them align and tighten, knowing that previously, from 7,000 years prior, they were able to trade amongst each other, and if the rest of the world gets its wings clipped because of some sort of cataclysm, that they would have something intact in advance, knowing the trade routes from prior, that they could make those re-emerge out of the sands and they could survive through this change that we're witnessing and experiencing right now. For the rest of the world, meh, maybe not. So I'll preface the second hour like that. Craig, appreciate you joining me. And yeah, man, welcome back. Floor is yours to respond to any of that.
Well, yeah, I look at the Silk Road 2.0. That's what I kind of call it. When I think about the BRICS, I think of the Silk Road, you know, 2.0, and we're seeing new currencies emerge, or just currencies as far as just local currency of countries being used to trade. Saudi Arabia not signing back on the petrodollar. And, of course, there was recently the BRICS Economic Summit, which they were talking about, of course, how to, you know, which they are thriving. How can they thrive through this change of this cyclical change, get away from the weaponized dollar and the SWIFT system? I mean, all of our sanctions, like, what Vander Crazy over there, Vander Lion, whatever you want to call her, you know, 14th sanction package. Are you kidding? You know? The BRICS nations don't care anymore. And it's a weird situation where these, old and high cultures, not that European culture is not, but still, these old and high cultures, they seem to be doing things in their own best interest and their people's best interest, where I look at the West, and it's very confusing, or maybe it's not so confusing, but I think about it, I do wonder if you look at like this grand chessboard, and so we have the cycles at this time. You have the grand solar minimum. You've got the a lot of cosmic energy coming in. Sasha Dobler, his books. We've had him on Radiant Creators, and he writes these very, very. He has two books out that I know of so far that are very, very detailed and talks about how yes, this time with the sun is difficult environmentally, but it's also traditionally, historically, always also been a time of enlightenment. So we're seeing this change in cycles, which is going to really suck ass for the West, and it's going to be good for Eurasia. And we seem to have older, ancient star-watching, weather-watching, cycle-watching cultures that I hope myself desire to break free from the cyclical reality of Earth plane. Now, very well, maybe there's no way around it. The cycles just happen. But one way or the other, I think that we would see in the East and in Eurasia, you would see a high time. You would see that empire get better and better and better for quite a while, and then eventually plateau and fail. Then we'll have the Western Empire again. So it might just be inevitable. But just since I don't live that long anyway, as in one incarnation, I can hope for the best and look for it. And so I would like to think that, yes. Well, here's an example. Something I think about a lot is I look at the Ukrainian conflict, and since we're not on YouTube, I can say, like, the Ukrainian conflict. So I look at that, and in this time where the West is not going to win, the cycle's going to go to Eurasia. That's just the way it is. I'm just going to say NATO and Western influence pushed the extreme nationalists of the Ukraine, like the Azov Battalion and Right Sector and all this, to threaten Donbass enough that Russia had to respond. They chose to. And when I look at that, it was dumb on the West's part because they never could win that situation per se. And now you look at China, you look at Russia, you look at really the whole BRIC nations, everybody, even ones who play both sides of the fence, like India and Turkey, who are not, and Saudi Arabia, who weren't going to play both sides of the fence very much longer. They're just bankrupting the European order, NATO and the EU and America. They're just weakening and weakening and weakening us. And that's fine, because that's just the way it is. But they're just sitting back, and it is like the great big NATO scrap metal processing factory. That's what it is. That's what the Ukraine is. Fine, send more shit. They'll just blow it up, I mean, as soon as they turn...
Hey, Greg, could I...
Go ahead. Yeah.
Could I interject here for a thought?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. They couldn't win. But that's the whole point.
Oh, I like it.
They couldn't win. They're not meant to win. What they're meant to do is take Ukraine, one of the world's largest breadbaskets, offline. You see, the purposeful destruction of the global food supply.
Yes.
If you can take 30 million tons of grain on purpose offline, you might look at it as from a military perspective, of course they're not going to win. They were never meant to win. What it was meant to do was take that breadbasket offline. That's the way I'm looking at it.
No, it makes sense. Lindsey Graham himself said that, we'll fight to the last Ukrainian, and probably will, and a bunch of NATO soldiers as well. And of course, the Lindsey Graham creature has talked about that there's lots of minerals there, lots of other natural resources that we want to get our hands on. He doesn't want Russia to get them. But anyway, that's all just, silly empire talk. But, if we're meant to fall on our own sword, if like the orders come from on high, from whatever demonic forces run the show, then, maybe we are just falling on our sword. We're bankrupting ourselves. And maybe that's the whole point of it. Now you have somebody you can blame, et cetera. You can say, whatever. But at the same time, that weakening of the Western empires, then you look at the Israeli situation. And I look at that and think, well, that's just too hard to even get into. But I would just say that if you look at what's going on, even though the Western, cable news watcher has no idea what's going on, Israel is slowly being bankrupt. Their people are fleeing. Northern Israel is vacant. Nobody's there because of the, Lebanon and Hezbollah constantly, bombing them with cheap rockets. You've got, from every direction, you've got cheap rockets fired at cities, which they're forced to respond to with like the Iron Dome, which cost a fortune every time they shoot it. And they're just shooting down, $5,000 bottle rockets. That's all they're shooting. And then like when Iran, for the first time, directly attacked them, what people don't realize is they go, yeah, we shot all the stuff down. No, you didn't. You shot down all junk that they gave you to shoot down. But they actually had some newer technology. They'd retrofit it. And if you watch some of the cool videos, which were there, even some of their older stuff would dodge the Iron Dome system. And and it's amazing, you know. And then, of course, you know, they have the multi-warhead, you know, missiles that then just break apart. And there are several warheads, and that just makes the whole Iron Dome worthless. But what people miss is that they also, sure, do you know how much that cost Israel $1 billion, and it cost like Western forces that had like some stuff like in Jordan and things like that, and some of the ships we had off the coast, it's about $3 billion, and and this comes from UN weapons inspectors actually, who have said that, you know, Iran has enough stockpile to do that every day for a year. So when I look at so many things that are going on, you know, I think that like if Eurasia is going to come to be the, you know, run the empire again, well, it would make sense that they find Israel offensive. And well, they've certainly been a-holes, so I can't blame them for not liking them. I mean, fine. It's you know, I'm not going to, like, whatever. It's a difficult conflict. I don't want to piss people off. It just depends on your worldview. But like, a weakened Western empire from the Ukrainian conflict, a weakened, you know, Western empire now really can't do much about one of their, you know, vassal states, one of their, like, I don't know, typical Western neocon policy of like an Israel. I mean, it was put there in 1947 by Britain. And then, of course, somehow it was given to us to take care of in like 67, I think. And so, we're seeing an awakening of the Arab world. This is like with the cosmic rays, you can say the Enlightenment. The people on the street, the Arab on the street, they won't tolerate their governments, you know, not doing something about it. And so you have the Houthis, the rednecks of the you know, Arab world there in Yemen, blowing the crap out of any ship headed towards Israel. You've got a Hezbollah from the north who's made northern Israel uninhabitable. You've got, I've heard as many, it's hundreds of Merkava tanks have been wiped out by Hamas, or just Hamas to me is just a kid whose parents died last night. That's who Hamas is, you know, who won some getbacks. And so, like, in a way, these wars seem big, like the whole Ukrainian conflict and like the Iranian and like the Israeli conflict. But I think at the same time, when you look at Russia, China, the BRICS nations, and many more nations joining the BRICS, you look at like South Africa kicking out European influence, these almost just seem like small skirmishes. And I think that, you know, Israel's nukes won't save them. And I think that, you know, the West will just get bankrupt in Ukraine. Europe is going to get, you know, more and more bankrupt by the situation. It's like, it's almost so stupid what's happening that what you're saying is it has to look real. And I'm really on the fence sometimes. I'm like, are they, you know, are the Western leaders this dumb, or are they just falling on their swords because of a bigger plan that they're following? You know, and it's really, I
ladder on your question there.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I go back and forth, you know, but maybe the place to buy land is Russia. I mean, really, maybe that's the place to get, you know, when this is all over, you know, we'll just be refugees heading to rural Russia to have little farms and just, you know, live out our days in peace. You know, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I look at the, you know, great research on World War II, for instance, you know, and when you get into it, the more and more you study it and you go deep, you realize that, like, it's like World War I. It was a game played with us. You know, there really were never any sides to that war. There were just intelligence agencies playing games. I think they were both great big scams. You know, there was a war, people did die, but I don't think there were any real actually adversaries at the top of either of those wars. There probably was just the Bank of International Settlements, like you're saying.
destroy the Antiquitech that was left over from the previous reset. Because I think a lot of that war was to actually destroy remnants of technologies that were around in the late 1700s that are equivalent with what we have today in terms of energy distribution using Earth's magnetic field versus combusting something that we do today. And that technology would allow us lives that were so free we wouldn't be on a metered system. I think a lot of these wars were to destroy the rest of the remnants of what was left from that time to continue to bring us to this metered system that we exist in today. Maybe it's far-fetched, but my gut tells me it's something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. And so I guess that's really the thing is, you know, whether it's authentic or whether it's planned, you know, there'll be the fall of the Western Empire and then there'll be the rise of Eurasia. And that's just inevitable. That cycle is going to happen. And I guess really it's just finding a way that you can do well and thrive during that time. And I do think like with the work you're doing and you know, the many, many videos you're putting out, you really are helping people who have the awareness to see it be able to get by, be able to thrive, you know. And one thing I saw that was really odd, so we know that, what was it, Russia and North Korea just signed like a joint protection agreement, which I thought was quite interesting. It's interesting, but here's a wild one. There's a book, and I don't think it's that old. I think it's fairly new. When I saw that, I couldn't help but think of this. So Russia and North Korea, joint protection agreement. There's a book just called Nuclear War, a Scenario, and it's by Annie Jacobson. And it's in paperback, Kindle, and it's in Audible, and it's not a pricey book. When was it written? I'm not exactly sure. Oh, maybe this year. I think it's fairly new. Well, this has got amazing research, and it's one of those books where it talks about a scenario of a nuclear war happening, and this lady has done amazing research on what we know, like what's our early warning, what's our Star Wars stuff, what's this, what's that, and when I heard that Russia and North Korea had signed a joint, you know, military, you know, joint protection. That really struck me because in her book, the scenario, the nuclear war that she speaks about is just out of the blue, North Korea just goes all out and shoots everything at the U.S. that they got. and then through every chapter, it gets into like within the first like, gosh, hour, like 90 million Americans are dead. There's this, there's that. It goes into what life would look like during and after. And so it's like, here's this nuclear war that happens. But then also between each chapter and each chapter, she breaks down like, I think it's like 10K were bought in the last month of her book. Wow. So it's number one bestseller. And so I'm looking at an Audible right now. So anyway, it's remarkable. If you want to learn about what it looks like, one of the things we have to realize is that if there's a, like with this whole thing and I wonder too, if like it, with all this nuke stuff, like why did Oppenheimer come out recently? That was really weird, you know, very, very weird.
Yeah, a lot of people saw that.
Yeah. So we've gotten cozy with nuclear weapons again. And so, and now we're, you know, in the middle, and you look at the it's a possibility, you know. Maybe we're supposed to nuke it out. I mean, wouldn't that be a great way to have your great reset and reset everything if you just blow the crap out of everything? And this book is awesome because it's scary. It's awesome. It's a great story of a nuclear war, but then every chapter breaks down what we know, how things work, and who has to talk to who. And it goes through each nation that's a nuclear power and how they deal with it, like what their systems are. And so if it was weird that after reading this book, I heard about that with North Korea. So if they just shoot everything at us, we only have like several minutes to do anything about it. And so the whole doctrine is usually decapitation, so you don't want to get decapitated. So we wouldn't have any choice but just basically send a crap ton of nukes their way. And then it gets into historically how often we've almost nuked each other, because the systems aren't perfect. And if nukes started flying after reading this book, and you can listen to it on Audible too, Nuclear War by Annie Jacobson, fairly new book. It really breaks down in like the 10 minutes that it would take for nukes to be landing and pretty much every nation to have fired up everything they got, because that's just going to be their doctrine, because you don't want to be decapitated. You got to get your nukes in the air before the nukes hit you. It just feels like, in a way, maybe we're close to actually having a nuclear conflict. It could happen. It could. And the thing is, so much of it's automated, and the world leaders of countries that are nuclear, they basically have no time to react. No time to really think, no time to strategize. There's just there's just game plans in place for every scenario imaginable, and they're pretty much going to have to give the nod to it. So, you know, before, like, gosh, you know, Biden wouldn't even know what the hell's going on. They would just say, dude, and of course there's going to be a lot of influence. You know, we got to nuke him right now. Like, you know, hopefully, like Dick Cheney would probably, like, reincarnate. Is he even alive now? Probably, like, in, like, you're going to have a lot of people leaning on world leaders. So, like, you got to send the nukes right now. So, anyway, what do you think about a great big just nuclear, you know, war? I mean, of course, we wouldn't be able to live on the surface of the Earth for 20,000 years. you know, we'll be underground for quite a while. It also gets into some of the science, as you know, a lot of this is conjecture because we have never really had an all-out nuclear war, but you know, makes good case for, you know, no living on the surface of the Earth for quite a while. And with that said, do you think that part of this, if it's all strategized, let's say it's not strategized at a higher level, or whether it is or it isn't, I am wondering if part of this whole thing is going to end up being like a nuclear war, because isn't that a great way to like reset everything? I mean, like all the world's, you know, governments, all their screw ups and everything else are deleted. You know what I mean? You've got however many people you've got left. You just round them up and you just put them back to work. And, you know, in a couple of generations, they're doing the same shit again. In fact, they might not even remember there ever even was a war. Like, has the Earth gotten burnt up in nuclear war already a few times? Like, if you look at a great big apocalypse, you know, if you look at a great big pole shift or something like that, or a comet hitting the Earth, you know, that could have happened in the past, and it just erased human knowledge. So I don't know. You know, I am wondering if in our lifetimes we'll just see just everything blown to crap, and then, oh well, there's our reset. A couple generations, no one even remembers what happened.
It would only take one generation, especially with today, where we don't have very many books and everything's digitized, and a single EMP would wipe out, you know, 80% of just knowledge on the planet, because most of it, like I say, is in a computer or digitized or something like that. But I would disagree about having to live underground, because if you look up to the and count up to the number of nuclear tests already carried out on our planet since the 1945, there's been 2,200 nuclear weapons exploded on our planet, underwater, above ground, beneath ground, ground level, and we're still here. 2,000, Craig, 2,000, including the Tsar Bomba, which they were afraid if they went any higher, it would actually crack the Earth's crust.
Wow.
That's how powerful. Yeah, there was... Well, like 1,500 times more powerful than the one on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was the most powerful bomb ever dropped on the planet. Or it exploded on the planet, for a better term. I mean, something so vast, it wiped out a 150-mile radius of scorched Earth. And we're still here to talk about it.
Mm.
So, you know, a few dozen or a dozen carefully lobbed nukes into cities to do that ultimate fear factor. Oh my gosh, can you imagine? If, you know, it was like New York City, it was like Paris, it was, you know, a couple of these bigger types of metropolitan areas, 10 of them, 12 of them. And then then people put on the brakes and go, hold, you got to hold, you know, we can't do this thing. Even if 2,000 more were exploded on the surface of the planet, we'd still be here and we could still live on the surface. Now, 20,000 may be a little bit different. But I want to go into the Deagle forecast with it. What year is it right now, Craig? Can you tell me what year it is?
2018? I don't know.
Yeah. What year is it right now? It's 2024.
Yeah, I mean, as far as that's the calendar year that we know of, yeah.
Yeah, sure. But Deagle forecasts are for 2025. That's for next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the Deagle forecast. Everybody's talking about the Deagle forecast for countries, which I happen to pull up here because we're getting into this.
Deagle forecast, okay.
You familiar with Deagle forecast?
I'm not. I'll have to look at it.
Okay. Well, anybody else, I'm going to run with Craig and try to explain Deagle forecast. For any of you
who
understand Deagle, it was a weapons manufacturing consortium of think tanks from Washington, those who manufacture arms, and those who were strategic planners, and it was like 20 of these think tanks that came together and did not only economic GDP forecasts, but also population forecasts from 2017 or 2015 to 17, compared to what their forecasts were for 2025 by the end of the year. So, for example, the United States, the number they have here is 316 million back in 2017. They're predicting the population to drop to under 100 million, to 99 million people by the end of next year. All right, so the United Kingdom, 63 million people, but by next year it's 14 million people. Ireland goes from 4.5 million down to 1.3 million. And Israel goes from 7 million to 3 million. And Libya from 6 million to 3 million. And France from 67 million down to 39 million. And Spain, 47 million down to 27 million. All right, so these are significant, like gargantuan population losses. Now, what would explain it to me the most is not just full-on nuclear exchange where people get vaporized. It would be an extremely limited, very small nuclear exchange to wipe out a fair few capitals across the planet and cause the most devastating fear. But at that time, it would shatter the supply chains. Now, those countries I just read you there, United States of America, major, absolutely major grain producer. If it was hit by a nuke on any one of our cities, grain production in terms of anything we could finance and give operational loans for farming would cease. All of our agriculture would stop. People would starve to death in America. And you look at the United Kingdom, you know, that would include Ireland, Wales, etc. The amount of food coming out of the United Kingdom also, that would stop on a dime. Germany, major, major wheat producer. So if they go from 80, this is Germany, 80 million down to 28 million. So there's no workforce. There's no farming. Just the simple fact by nuking 12 major capital cities across the planet would bring the entire industrial agriculture to a standstill. And there would be a global famine for several years until... It wouldn't be the devastation from the nukes itself. It would be the fear and the lockup of financial capital and the complete shutdown of supply chains that would include fuel and food, both. Now, after everything ran its course for a year and then things stabilized, of course, the following year, you could get back to food production. But we are talking a full year off supply chain, a full year of self-sufficiency, a full year of marauding bandits, and a full year of you trying to get together and stay alive with your communities. Again, some people are going to embrace that and be like, hell yeah, I don't have to go to work. I don't have to do anything. It's a focus right here in front of me, and that's total focus on the land, in nature, all the time. People are going to embrace that. I guarantee you. They're going to go from being afraid to actually enjoying the change of lifestyle that it brought them because they're going to be totally focused back into nature again, something that most of us don't have a chance to do. But those numbers off the Deagle 2025 forecast, Now, the GDP numbers are on a different sheet, and they didn't include it here, but I'd seen this. But the interesting thing is there's a lot of countries that either remain stable or increase population. China, for example, increases population. Argentina increases population. You know, there's places in South America that increase population, as well as China. And Russia also. So you're looking at this BRICS, and you start to think South Africa is going to stay stable. So then you're looking at all these BRICS nations on the Deagle 25 forecast here. And it also, you know, it matches up with, you know, these big players in BRICS seem to stay same or gain a little population. Some island nations stay stable or gain population. If you're looking for safe places on the planet, you need to find the full list and the breakdown of Deagle 2025 forecast. There's been a lot of people who've run the numbers, and they show you green where it's increasing population, red where it's decreasing. But here's the thing. Ukraine is slated, at least by the end of next year, to go from 44 million down to 31 million. Well, they're already there anyway. Right? The number of people who've left and the number of people who've already lost lives on the battlefield. But what happened in Ukraine is a perfect example. I've been working on the story here, trying to tone it down to pass the censors on YouTube. There are so many people involved in the war effort, they don't have enough people to plant this year or operate the machinery. Their supply chains are broken. They don't have the financing. So their agricultural yield coming out of the Ukraine, which normally would supply 30 million tons of grains to the rest of the world, this year will be near zero. They simply don't have any manpower to get the mechanized farming up and plow those fields and harvest it and bring it to market because there's a war going on. Now, if you bring that on a global scale and you, like I say, you lob a few nukes into some capital cities, not everywhere, just a handful of nations, specifically in the economic markets and the stock market capitals of those nations. If one goes into London, the entire financial and banking system is absolutely going to lock up completely, like super glue locked up. Nothing's going to move. The entire financial system will be paralyzed. And if one goes into New York and London at the same time and Singapore, then banking and finances, you know, will no longer exist on this planet. Everything, there will be nothing that will function. None of your credit cards will function. The only thing that will be really viable will be Bitcoin or some sort of cryptocurrencies if there's electricity to broadcast. Transactions out on, maybe Starlink, you know?
Yeah.
Because I don't even know if Singapore would be a legitimate target because they're part of the new BRICS, you know, aligned nations anyway. They're going to be the central bank inside the Asian realms. Plus, you might contaminate Indonesia, and they need that for the rice. There's a lot of, you know, Southeast Asian nations that are switching over to BRICS, and it seems like that area of the world is going to be the new honeypot. But think about if you put a nuke into Frankfurt, you put one into Paris, you put one into London and New York, what would happen with the world's financial system? Just in those four places alone would disrupt enough agriculture that people would start starving to death around the world. And then the infighting, and then the wars would start, and then there'd be, you know, drafts and this and that. So you could explain away the Deagle forecast of population decline by that. It's not going to be a single event, but it will be a string of events brought on by a single event. If it is the nuclear exchange, limited, like you say, 10 more nukes in the world isn't going to hurt anything, I assure you. Ain't going to hurt a thing. 10, they're going to scoff at that. We've already blown off 2,200 plus. So 10 more, that's just, that won't even be recognizable in the soup from your Geiger counter. The fear and the disruption of the economy, that's what will. And let me tell you a quick story, Craig, before I let off. I went to this estate sale, and it was an old Vietnam prepper estate sale. This dude had, like, stuff from the 70s, medical kits, all kind of crazy solar cookers. He had this big, like, wind-up antenna that was on the back of a truck that went up, like, 50 feet in the air using cables, winches and things. Anyway, he had a Geiger counter, so I bought it. And the thing pegged, completely pegged. And I was asking somebody, you know, why isn't this Geiger counter working? Because we try to, you know, zero it down and, you know, get it wired in there correctly. And they're like, oh, well, the nuclear material that they were using in the 1960s, was calibrated for that much nuclear material in the air, in the water, in the environment around you. Since that time, we've had so many more nuclear tests that what would be considered, and he was almost making a joke going, you know, if they would have seen this reading back then, it would have given people heart attacks because they would have seen how much, you know, some nuclear exchange would have gone on because it pegged the Geiger counter. It would have scared everybody to death by seeing it pegged at that. He's like, you need to get it recalibrated. They have to take the old, like, sample, I guess, out, and recalibrate it and put a new one for our modern era in and then recalibrate it down because there's been so much nuclear material that is now in our environment around us that the old 1960s Geiger counters no longer work. They peg because it's like something 100 times more in our environment now than there was then. And we are all still here. And that was the whole thing, is these Geiger counter, it's unusable today unless it gets recalibrated. So put that in your pipe and smoke it for a second and see how this whole thing could run and how these numbers could really match up depending on a single event that would turn into a string of events. I don't know, man. Maybe it's getting late. Maybe I'm babbling. I don't know.
No, well, with that said, I mean, people sure do seem to get cancer a lot these days. So, you know, with 2,000, you know, nukes one way or the other tested and old Geiger counters not even working anymore. Well, that would explain a lot because, you know, I am amazed at how many people get cancer and die, you know, or get cancer, whatever, I mean, and live, however you want to look at it. But it does seem weird to me sometimes, or just all the time, really. Just how can this thing be so pervasive and it takes out healthy people, unhealthy people, whatever? You know, how many out of, like, how many people out of 100 will die of cancer, you know, now compared to, let's say, in the 60s, then like compared to the 30s, and then, like, you know, 1900, even 1890. I mean, we look at it, I think it probably was unheard of, you know, and now it's, I mean, it's big business. And it's always seemed weird to me that if you live an unhealthy life and you eat garbage and you think and you're a miserable, unhappy person, well, yeah, you're going to get sick and die. But at the same time, I just know too many, I don't know, health is a matter of opinion. I mean, I shouldn't say opinion. I mean, there are facts, but, you know, some people consider their diet and lifestyle healthy and it is not. And then some people are, you know, on, I guess, like the true side of it, and they really do live healthy. But it seems like no matter what an individual does, that monster seems to visit a lot of people. And so the Earth being fairly irradiated would make sense because it's coming from somewhere. And it seems like it's just so random in how it it finds people and takes them out. But it, like with the population decreasing, if we look at Ukraine alone, they've got 500,000 dead soldiers, you know, mostly soldiers, not necessarily civilians. Some civilians thrown in there as well, of course. But 500,000 dead easy. And then, of course, when you look at death, you have to, like, kind of double that's going to be your casualties, who are wounded and usually not making it back to the battlefield. So you got 1 million wounded. And anyway, so when it comes to the nukes suddenly flying, that's also a great way to control the masses. Because if you think about it, you mentioned, like, what if they hit, like, financial centers like London? Well, it's kind of funny. I remember a certain date, I think it was 9/11, where a financial center was attacked, or, you know, maybe by external forces, but probably not, you know, one way or the other. And that was that same effect. I mean, the whole world, they made the Patriot Act, the whole world changed. So in a sense, if you look at, like, what happened after 9/11, an attack, which some believe it was, you know, a foreign country that attacked us, some believe that it was an internal, doesn't really matter. It does matter. But if we look at the effect afterwards, that was the Patriot Act was already written. You know, they just put it on the table and it got passed, along with other all kinds of crazy other evil stuff. And so if you can get that kind of mileage out of 9/11, yeah, truly, imagine what you could do with you know, missiles landing in, you know, New York and London, in Berlin, you know, all these major, you know, metropolises. I mean, crap, you look at like here in Phoenix, this place is as big, if not bigger, than LA. Place is huge, it's sprawling. So middle of LA, here and there. I mean, if you want to be able to control, if you want to get a hold of a population that is slipping away from you, especially in the Western Empire, yeah, a couple of well-placed nukes by a, you know, an enemy, you could say, I mean, that's what they're going to call it. That is a great way to get lots and lots of soldiers to go off and die in a war. You know, I mean, it worked great. I mean, 9/11, that got us invading Iraq. It got, you know, what was Afghanistan occupied for a long time? Patriot Act, all kinds of stuff. I mean, they got some serious traction with that one. And yeah, if they can get that from 9/11, I can only imagine what they can get out of, you know, a few ICBMs landing in the same city. I mean, whoever's left is going to, like, they're going to want some get backs. They're going to want some payback, you know, and they will go off and fight, you know, and they will believe you want to get rid of the, you know, alternative media. You know, I mean, that's any other media other than, like, what is the mainstream on the cable, like what the Empire wants you to know. That's a great way. I mean, yeah. I you know, I hate to think about it because I just, when I think about what we're talking about, you know, a few well-planned nukes, you know, in a war started by whoever, there's going to be no stopping it. You know, if it's organized, I guess at the highest levels and it's all coordinated, okay, fine. But there's a good chance that, you know, the survivors are going to have no communications, no food, no. They're going to be exactly what the Empire wants. You know, it's very sad, but, you know, when we look at what they want to do, what a great way to get those numbers from the Deagle forecast quickly, and then, you know, get back to a. Well, here's the thing. Even that could be a real monkey wrench in the works, because, I mean, if the cycle is heading towards Eurasia, I mean, you know, how does you know, nuclear power is duking it out? How does that affect that cycle? I mean, is it still inevitable? You know, I do really think that we have, I call them like neoconservatives. That's fine. You know, the whole Dick Cheney crew, Project for New America Century, all that stuff. We have a lot of, I think, people in the West, leaders in the West, who have a good deal of power, who are deep state and like invisible deep state, who I think would scorch the earth. They would go all out to, because in their minds, there's no cycle taking place, and they would do whatever they could to stop Eurasia from coming to power. And I think that they have very limited intellects, but they are psychopaths. And I could, well, there you go. Now that I think about it, I could see nuclear war being really, really easy. Just because, I mean, there's people in the West, I think, leaders in the West, that would push it, because they would know that it would give them a chance of Eurasia not coming to power. I mean, that's just the way they think. It's the way they do things. I mean, look at what we've done around the world to keep a unipolar, you know, boot on every nation's neck around the world. You know, whether it's a false flag or whether it's just something organic that happens that they can take advantage of. You know, gosh, I've never thought about it as deeply, but, you know, a nuclear war would truly serve the Western Empire at this time. It's just a Hail Mary play, you know. You might come out on top and break the cycle. That's their belief. I don't think it would work, but they'd go for it.
You know? You said, what, 90 countries? That's crazy. Now, what happens? Walk me through this. If we lose comms, then how fearful do you think people would become? Let's say there is no communication, unless you do, if you don't have ham radio, or if you don't have CB, or you don't have any way to even listen to even the weather, because you don't have a emergency preparedness radio that's, you know, solar powered or something. I mean, what kind of fear is it when people don't have communications? Like, how do you think they're going to react?
Oh yeah. After there was a show, Jericho. Here's one for you.
Never seen it, but I've heard of
it. So there is a show, it was a TV show, and it was a series. It had a season or two, and it was called just Jericho. And it's funny, Jericho, where did you go, Jericho? Well, anyway, I would recommend, yeah, Jericho, J-E-R-I-C-H-O. It was a TV series between 2006 and 2008. And I think that's one worth watching, because I think that it's sort of, many people think that it kind of got cut short because it was like hitting too close to home, you might say. So in Jericho, there's an EMP attack. So it's not a nuclear attack where things are blowing up, but it's like an EMP attack. And it's about Jericho. I think it's a city that actually exists that's very rural. And there were some, I guess you'd say like an intelligence agency asset who was there. And, you know, he didn't expect it per se, but he knew what had happened when it did. And, you know, there were still communications between, like, you could say some government organizations. I mean, there was some like DOD, you know, Department of Defense communications and such, and he was still tapped into those. So he could see what was going on to some extent. But in general, it gets into the city, Jericho, and their kind of fight for survival. So it's an entertaining TV show. If people just want to just, you know, veg out and just watch some serious, you know, prepper stuff. Jericho is great because it really gets into like the finite nitty gritty of what it's like to be in a smaller town where you have a chance of survival, where you're rural enough to have enough, you know, space between you and population centers to actually defend yourself, and, you know, what happens within that, that city. That, like I say, it's Hollywood. It gets crazy. I mean, it's Hollywood, right? But they were on to something. It was a bit inspired, I think. So my answer to that one is, what would people do? Watch Jericho. It's great stuff. But in general, I think that people get very fearful. You know, you're going to have a criminal element that takes advantage of the situations. You're going to see home invasions. You're going to see, you know, small feudal, like, gang groups who start dividing up neighborhoods and all. It's going to, if we actually lost communications and we didn't have power, et cetera, and people couldn't find, there was no internet, they couldn't see what's going on, it would be a battle for a few weeks, a few months between like the criminal element and the psychopaths in our society versus the people who, you know, want their kids to survive and grandma to have insulin and such. And the good people will eventually kill the bad ones, and you'll have a society that begins to function in a very tribal neighborhood by neighborhood way. And I just say that from seeing it happen in Somalia. So I've seen it firsthand, and in my opinion, that's in general what happens. But, you know, the amount of destruction, death, homelessness, it's so awful that, you know, I'd rather not live through it, to be honest with you. I would run out and like try to catch the first nuke I saw coming, because it's not an existence that's worth anything, to be honest with you. Sorry to be so cheery.
No, that means, you know, that should drive the point home to everybody that having communications backup is going to be one of the most essential things, because you could have advanced warning of well, obviously storms because, you know, Weather Channel. But military movements or people that are going to be moving through your area, if the military is moving through your area, so you could, like, get out of the way or hide out for a minute while they pass through. Just general chatter of somebody even in your local area, 5, 6, 7, 8 miles away, depending on your line of sight or where your height is or broadcasting from. Just even information of what's going on 10 miles away to give you that advanced warning. Huh? Like 10 miles in a grid down, that's a long time for somebody to progress toward you.
Oh, it certainly is, yeah. And I think that if there was, and I think actually that would become a real, you know, commodity at that point, would be communications, because, you know, all these things become difficult to sustain. So, like amateur radio you're talking about, well, you got to have your repeaters, you know, up, and they could be put in the middle of neighborhoods and things like that. So people could be using their little biofong handy talkies, and there could be communication. You know, you need power. You got to have some, you know, generators running. But I would just say that all of that comes after the initial battle, as I call it, because a lot of our society, unfortunately, has no interest in that, and they would just take advantage of it. And, you know, it's weird. Like they say, like, you know, an armed society is a polite society. It's like, you're right. It is, you know, but that comes after you get rid of all the bad people, you know, and there ain't no prisons after shit hits the fan. So there's only one thing you can do with the bad people, and that's what happens. And so there you go. But not a very pretty picture, but society will shake off the bad people, and it would get back on its feet. Yeah. And communications would probably be like, you know, like, yeah, you know, how would you give a gold coin for a biofong radio so that you could know when the, military is coming, when food is going to be around, when bad people are in your area, you know, yeah, communication like that. Because there might not be large communication, as in like the internet, you know, you might really be at kind of a, you know, wherever a repeater can reach, and then like repeaters talking to repeaters, you know, but, society would get it back together. But yeah, so there you go. That's a great, that might be one of the best tips ever, is like, you know, get your cheap ass biofung radios, you know, buy 25 of them on Alibaba, and make sure they work, know how to use it, know what channels you're going to use, know if you have repeaters in the area, know how far you can actually be from one another without repeaters and communicate, you know, have kind of a plan on how you're going to, you know, get in touch with your, you know, loved ones and friends and your team, in a sense, have the ability to communicate at distance. And you're going to be doing really, really well. It's going to be an incredible, advantage. It really will be, you know.
Yeah. How they're going to sort out who owns what properties at the end of that too. Like, and you might go in owning a property, but when you come out, do you still own that property? Because you take a look at World War One and Two. I mean, do you prove ownership of your property? Well, new borders have been drawn around your, you know, you're in a different country now, you know? How does that work?
After the smoke clears, you figure it out. Yeah.
All right. Good words of wisdom. Thanks for listening to us tonight. I'm here with Craig Simpson signing off.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the truth, Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyphen, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for